Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Vretos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. You know, before the show began today, I was looking back on some of the 338 Ask Beatty shows that I've done here on the Progressive Radio Network. And of course, I would love to be able to talk with you, and I would like to be able to know what kind of real impact that I have had in terms of particularly convincing you that it is a really good thing, that it is a positive thing, that it is a strong thing, that when life starts to feel out of balance, that you actually give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. And I think over the last many, many years, I think it is becoming more okay for people to realize that seeing a therapist or a counselor or a life coach, of course, you have to be very, very careful who you choose to see, because clearly all therapists, all doctors, all nutritionists, all dentists are certainly not the same, so that we have to be very, very consumer savvy when we make a decision that we are going to reach out and ask for help. But this year, this past year, I can hardly believe that it is a little over a year since the pandemic began last March, that we have been in a really, really crazy time. And what we have been finding, of course, is that the pandemic and COVID, I don't believe that it caused the depression and it caused the increase in anxiety disorders, and it didn't cause the high divorce rate and domestic violence awareness and domestic violent rates, but it certainly did exacerbate people's issues and people's problems. And the American Medical Association has told us that 30% of Americans are suffering from clinical depression, 40 million adults suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And of course, I continue to look at and I continue to talk about the divorce statistics, which of course for first marriages, 48%. For second marriages, that number, my friends, it does not go down. It goes up. That 67% of couples marrying for the second time end up in the divorce courts. And for third marriages, that statistic rises to 74%. And one of the real concerns that I've had in the past year is looking at the suicide statistics for young people. And what the statistics are telling us is that suicide attempts by young people quadrupled. They have quadrupled over the past 6 years. And you kind of wonder, what is it that is going on? And the feelings of alienation and disconnect have certainly not helped people, young or old, feel really good about their lives. I mean, look at what we've been having to deal with, the impact of the virus on jobs, on our health, on social relationships, of course, on our mental health. And it has. It's impacted people financially in all kinds of ways. Concerns about not only losing my job, but am I going to be able to pay my rent and buy food? Basic things that most people typically did not have to worry about. Of course, now things seem to be easing up a bit, although we still need to be very, very careful. I live here in New York City, and people are really pretty compliant. When I walk around the streets, people are still maintaining social distance, and the majority of people are wearing masks. So what we need to do is continue to listen to the experts and make sure that we actually are doing things that are in our best interest. which of course means eating well, plant-based diets, fruits and vegetables. And we hear Gary Nell talking about this all the time, making sure that we get enough sleep. And of course, the interactions with other human beings, so important to combat the feelings of disconnect and loneliness. And of course, studies and of course, BD Confredas cannot emphasize enough the importance of exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation, anything at all that we can do to de-stress and keep us focused and feeling good. And of course, having supportive people in our lives, so terribly important, and eliminating toxins of every kind. And of course, when most people talk about toxins, what do they talk about? Well, they talk about chemicals and making sure that we are avoiding chemicals in our foods and in our products. And of course, when I talk about toxins, I mean, I also, think about chemicals, but I primarily talk about toxic people and how important it is for all of us to distance ourselves and eliminate, if all possible, people who are poisonous to us. And that sometimes means friends and family. And I think in this past year, it's given all of us a lot of time to reevaluate and reset and figure out the kind of life that we really want to be living. I know so many people have talked about moving. Many, many people that I talk about within my practice have really been giving some second thoughts to their careers. And do they really want to be spending 90 hours a week? And maybe for some, that's a bit of an overstatement, working and working on the computer. So I think it's really important for all of us to sit back and not only just once a year at New Year's and figure out, are we living our lives in ways that are really in our best interest? You know, there were a couple of articles in the New York Times that I wanted to share with you. One was written by Gina Belafonte. And the headline was, "Parts of COVID Life We Might Just Want to Keep." And Gina was saying that it's forced us all, hopefully it has, to reevaluate how and with whom we want to live our lives. And I think it has also forced us to shift our priorities, and it's brought a new kind of enlightenment. You know, I remember reading an article by Warren Buffett, and he was saying that he says no to most things and that he is very, very careful what he says yes to and what he opts in to do, both business-wise and professionally. And I have to tell you, I have not missed going on the subways. I have not missed wearing high heels, although I have to admit that I do my makeup and I do get dressed up every single day, even though my entire practice is on Zoom and I haven't seen a live patient now for more than a year. But I think that a lot of people are finding, especially now with the computer, that we're able to connect with friends and family anywhere in the world without leaving our home. I mean, having said that, what studies have found is that people are eating more and exercising less, which of course is not a good thing. But now that the sun is out and the weather is getting warmer, we should all be able to find time every single day, no excuses, to at least take a walk around the block if you are still in a position where you are going to be able to work at home. And, you know, other questions, you know, who do I really want to spend time with in person? I mean, if you're really honest with yourself, how many and of your professional and social engagements over the years did you go to And then you wondered, oh, why? Why did I actually bother to come? It wasn't really enriching. The networking didn't really pay off for me. I spent a lot of time coming and going. So it's a time for us to really get honest with ourselves and figure out what we want to do, how we want to spend our time, who we want to spend our time to, what events do I really want to attend. However, in Gina Belafonte's article, she also, and rightly, focused on many people where there is a double burden and where they do not have these kinds of choices and options. And these are the people who, in quotes, serve the privileged, the garbage collectors, the transit workers, the wait staff, the first responders, the doctors and nurses. And these people, they do not have an option about whether or not they are going to make that daily commute, regardless of how much time they're spending in their cars or in the subways. And hopefully we are all that we're able in our own way to express gratefulness to all of these people who keep our day-to-day life going. And for these people, there's increased family pressure, more stress, less family time, continued concern about the virus. And this is why, you know, I keep reminding you every single week about the importance of incorporating the exercise, the meaningful connections, time that's worth spending with self and others can really create a more satisfying and less frenetic life for yourself. So I ask you, like I ask my patients after every single session, people who worked with me for years, they know what their homework is going to be. And I can give you the same homework. And that is to make sure every single day, as you are navigating your life, as you are interacting with people, your personal colleagues and friends, as well as your professional life, that you are really living your life in ways that are in your best interest. And that means being good to yourself, being true to yourself, making sure that you do have supportive people around you. And that means eating well and getting enough sleep and exercising and really being honest with yourself and keeping tabs and making sure that you are being really good to yourself and avoiding the self-destructive, the self-sabotaging, and the destructive behaviors and people and interactions that it is so easy for us to get into if we are not mindful, if we are not mindful that we are important and that we deserve to live our lives in ways that are truly in our best interest. Well, I was going to actually review another article that was in the business section of the New York Times that I may do either later today or I'll do next week. And this is about people who have not done well at all with the pandemic. And they're talking about pandemic burnout and excessive tiredness and really feeling out of sort. But I think that I am going to leave this article for later. And I am going to introduce a woman who I have yet to meet on Zoom or on the telephone, but she sounded terrific. And what I like to do when I have guests is to have people who have something significant to talk about so that they can educate and they can inspire and they can motivate us to live more joyful and more healthy lives, regardless of the issues and regardless of the subject matter that they are bringing to you, my audience. So my guest today is Elle Michael. And she is a licensed marriage and family therapist from Santa Monica, California. And she has a master's degree in clinical psychology and a bachelor's degree in cultural anthropology. Elle maintains a private practice in LA where she specializes in the treatment of trauma and borderline personality disorder. And this is pretty, pretty heavy stuff, using EMDR, brain spotting, trauma resiliency model, and DPT. So Elle, I welcome you to the Ask Beattie Show. Hello.
Thank you, Beattie. Hi, it's so great to be here.
Well, it's so great. It's so great to have you here. And you know, your emails, when we were, you know, interacting just online, they were warm, they were loving. And that was really one of the reasons that really prompted me, over and above all the things that you were doing, that I wanted to meet you, and I wanted to share your expertise with my audience. So
wonderful.
You are dealing with some very, very heavy duty problems and issues.
Yeah. Yeah, and just a quick note. My last name is actually Michelle. It's not Michael.
Elle Michelle. I mispronounced it. Elle Michelle. Okay, everybody, just write that down and pronounce it correctly. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no problem. But yeah, so I'm dealing with a lot of pretty heavy stuff. And I really love working with the clients that I work with.
So let me, who are your, in quotes, typical trauma clients, and what kinds of traumas are they experiencing?
Yeah.
Have they experienced that they have been prompted to reach out to you and ask for help?
Right. Yeah. So I deal with a lot of people who have experienced sexual assault, whether it was in childhood, adolescence, or adulthood. I deal with a lot of people who have experienced having a parent who was either mentally ill or addicted to a substance, and the kind of relational trauma that creates, where it just can impact people's functioning in relationships. It can impact their self-esteem. Let's see, I've worked with kids who've had the trauma of having parents who were undocumented immigrants and not knowing if their parents were going to be deported on any given day or not.
That's trauma. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even if the parents are never deported, just the kids seeing it in the news and knowing they could come home from school one day and their parents could not be there is traumatic, just for a kid to live that way. So I've dealt with a lot of different things, but a lot of it has been family-based trauma, whether it's verbal abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, emotional neglect, things of that nature.
Let me ask you, what is your, if there is such a typical age? Now, in my practice, I'm starting to see, you know, more and more young women in their mid-20s. But typically, my clientele are in their 40s and 50s and 60s. So I'm kind of curious, with these kinds of traumas, are you finding that people are coming in when they are younger, when they are older, that there has been some precipitant event that actually got them to say, you know, I really need to reach out and get some help?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. And a lot of my clients, they have the trauma, but then they also have, let's say, they have suicidality, they have self-harm, they have maybe an eating disorder or a substance abuse issue. They have pretty extreme mood dysregulation, meaning their mood fluctuates and they feel angry and they feel sad and they're not able to kind of manage their emotions. So those would be some of the qualities that we're looking at that are more along the criteria for borderline personality disorder. So a lot of people come to me for those types of issues, and the trauma is something that's happened in the past, but not necessarily their presenting issue. Now, of course, to resolve those other issues, oftentimes we need to dive into the trauma and process that and work on that. But not always. Like, a lot of times we have to help people get stable first, you know, and get safe first.
Well, as I say to people all the time, it takes so much courage, doesn't it, Elle, to have the chutzpah, to have the guts, to really recognize that I need some help. And, you know, this is something that, you know, I've been trying to do in the media now for so many years, to get people to realize that it is a strength and not as a weakness. And when you look at, you know, other disciplines, and I, you know, I'm an athlete, I'm a competitive tennis player, and everybody, you know, in the competitive professional world, we have teams, and that we don't need to navigate, you know, the ups and downs, whether we're talking about, you know, professional sports or issues in our personal lives. We don't need to do it alone. And I think that it is a good thing. It is a really good thing that people more and more are recognizing that they can reach out to an Elle Michelle, or they can reach out to somebody like myself and actually be able to, you know, acknowledge and address and resolve things that they may never be able to resolve on their own. So I'm curious, since I've, you know, worked in a more traditional way than you, I haven't used the EMDR, the brain spotting. So what does, because I know that my audience is always really interested in other, you know, therapeutic modalities. What does a first session look like when a client comes in to see Elle Michelle? What do you do?
So, so pretty much across the board, regardless of which modality we're going to end up using, the first session is all about assessment. And so that's me asking the client questions. And a lot of that is about establishing safety and establishing whether that client is appropriate to see me for outpatient therapy, or whether there are safety issues present such that the client would benefit from more intensive treatment, like intensive outpatient treatment or even residential treatment. So in the first session, that's really what we're trying to establish. And that looks like me asking the client a lot of questions about their day-to-day life and their struggles and kind of what brought them into therapy, and also their history, their family history, any history of suicidal behavior, things like that.
Well, you know, what's really interesting about your practice is that you do use a variety of different techniques over and above talk therapy. And, you know, when I was looking at your website, for example, brain spotting trauma resiliency model. I mean, I hadn't, frankly, I have no idea what that is. I started to read a little bit about it, but I'm really curious. What does that mean? What do you do? What are the pros and cons of that over some of the more traditional ways of practicing?
Yeah, so to understand some of these trauma modalities, we have to start by understanding the brain and looking at two basic parts of the brain. So the neocortex, which is right behind our forehead, which is in charge of logic and reason and language. And then the subcortex, which for oversimplification, we're going to call basically everything else in the brain. And it's in the subcortex that we experience our emotions and we deal with memory. So when we have trauma, trauma impacts the whole entire brain. So when we, for example, I like to use the example of, let's say, like a war veteran who was in active combat. and they were experiencing post-traumatic stress symptoms when they returned home to the U.S. But it was 4th of July and they were hearing fireworks go off.
Right.
So the sound of the fireworks reminded them of the sound of bombs or bullets. And they started having, you know, sweats and heart racing and panic attacks in response to the sound of the fireworks. Now, right. Traditional talk psychotherapy tends to focus on the neocortex. So that would involve telling that person, you're totally safe right now. The sounds you're hearing are fireworks, not bombs. You're not in a war zone. You're in a safe place, right? So
right.
That's helpful. That person yes. definitely needs to hear that, and they may need to hear it a number of times. But it doesn't really address the deeper parts of the brain, the limbic brain, which is in charge of emotions and memory, all of that subcortical brain that is responding to the noise and not necessarily responding to the language and the labeling of the noise. So what brain spotting and EMDR and trauma resiliency model do is they work more with the nervous system and with those deeper parts of the brain to actually change the brain's reaction to a particular trigger.
So let me ask you this, Elle. Now, with brain spotting and the trauma resiliency model, so what do you actually do? I mean, I'm familiar with EMDR, and I certainly want the audience to hear more about that. But what do you do when you're doing brain spotting and using the trauma resiliency model? What do you say? What do you do? What goes on during the sessions? How does it work? Why does it work?
Yeah. So brain spotting and EMDR are kind of more similar to each other. So brain spotting and EMDR both use what's called bilateral stimulation, which in EMDR oftentimes is eye movements. So the client's eyes moving left to right in their head. EMDR also uses tapping the left and right sides of the body back and forth for bilateral stimulation. Brain spotting uses music for bilateral stimulation. So we have the client actually put in headphones and listen to a special type of music where the music goes from left to right in the ears.
Uh-huh.
So with brain spotting and EMDR, once we get the bilateral stimulation going, we then bring up a traumatic memory for the client, whatever the client wants to work on. And we have the client talk about it and basically process through that memory in a mindful way. What brain spotting adds is more of a focus on body sensations, and brain spotting actually uses the position of the eyes in the brain to find what they call the brain spot. So with brain spotting, as a therapist, I take out a pointer and I actually hold it up and I point to the client's left and I have them look there. And then I point to the center and then to the client's right and have them look there. And we identify where their emotions are strongest depending on where they're looking.
Wow.
And then let's say it's on the left. So from the left, I scan the left side. We find the exact spot. And then I scan up and down from that spot. So we find a specific place where their eyes are looking, where their sensations are the strongest, and that brain spot is connected to where in the brain that trauma is held. And so there's something that happens where by looking at that spot, listening to the bilateral stimulation music, and talking about the trauma, that the body and the nervous system processes through and releases the trauma.
So that's
EMDR and brain spotting. Trauma resiliency model doesn't use the bilateral stimulation. And it's more about talking about where the client is feeling different sensations in their body, where they're feeling a sense of calm or safety in their body, and looking at kind of moving the client's sensation back and forth from a place of wherever they're feeling activation or, you know, difficult feelings in their body to where they're feeling calmness in their body. Trauma resiliency model also uses the imagination and helps clients develop like a peaceful place or a safe place that's an imaginary place that they can go to, and uses a lot of sensory stuff, like having the client focus on what smell they might smell in their safe place.
As I'm listening to you speak, Kel, I mean, I can just envision that there is a tremendous reduction of anxiety during the time that the people would be with you, you know, during their sessions. And how long are your sessions, by the way, when you're using these techniques?
Yeah, you know, most of the time my sessions are 50 minutes, which is my normal session length, but sometimes people want to go for 80 minutes. I've done longer sessions when people want to get really kind of deeper into the work, but it can totally be done in a typical 50-minute session.
So are these techniques that your clients, that our clients, are able to learn to do on their own when they're not with you or when they're not with a therapist? Like, how long does it take for somebody who is doing EMDR or brain spotting or trauma, using a trauma resiliency model or DBT, how long before you're finding that people are feeling less anxious, less traumatized, and more able to really live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present?
You know, it differs for each client. One thing that is important is for EMDR and brain spotting, typically these aren't techniques that we're like teaching the client for them to then do on their own. Uh-huh. There's one element of EMDR called resourcing, which is similar to trauma resiliency model, which is about having the client imagine being in a peaceful place and imagine having all their needs met, and they can do some tapping while they imagine that. So that's called resourcing, and that's teaching the body and the brain how to feel safe. That is something clients can do on their own, and that we actually encourage clients to do on their own in between sessions. But the actual trauma processing aspect, it's really recommended that clients do that in session with a clinician. In terms of how long does it take for clients to start to get relief? You know, some clients will start to see significant improvements in just a few sessions. But it really depends what kind of trauma history the person has. So the more complex their trauma history, meaning multiple traumatic events that repeated many times over many years, typically that's going to mean that it's going to take a longer time for those clients to need to do trauma processing in order to feel significantly better. When we're looking at what's called a single incident trauma, like somebody who's never been abused as a child and who has a pretty healthy sense of themselves and has healthy, stable relationships, and then let's say they experience one traumatic event, like, for example, a really bad car accident, that is a situation where somebody could clear that in just a few sessions, theoretically. I haven't done as much work with single incident trauma because the reality is most human beings on the planet have more complex stuff going on. But I have worked with some pretty complex cases who felt relief significant relief after just a handful of session. And then some other clients who've been in session for several months and have started to feel relief.
You know, it's so interesting. I'm just actually looking at the internet right now. And, you know, I want people to know what, you know, what the latest thinking is. And this is a quote, brain-based therapy is the fastest growing area in the field of psychological health because it is proven that it can immediately address issues that talk therapy take years to heal. I mean, and you're finding that as well. Is that correct, Elle?
Absolutely, yeah. So the idea is that with these brain and body-based therapies, we're accessing parts of the brain that traditional talk therapy just can't really get to. So for people with trauma, sometimes talking about it can help. And there's, of course, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a way of talking about trauma and helping people process through their trauma that's purely cognitive, language-based and thinking-based. And those types of things can help. But for some people with trauma, talking about it can actually be damaging and be kind of re-traumatizing in a way. So for these types of therapies, talking about it is optional, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you is when you're doing, for example, EMDR, whether or not the person is recounting the traumatic experiences. And yet I hear you saying that the talking part is not, which is so interesting, is not critical in terms of being able to help to alleviate the trauma, the anxiety, the depression that goes along with having been traumatized.
Right. Well, so I think I spoke a little prematurely. With EMDR, there is more talking involved. So with EMDR, the person typically is talking through some of their memories of the traumatic event, but they could also be talking through just images that are coming to mind or body sensations or other kinds of memories that could be connected in some way to the traumatic event. With brain spotting, the talking really is optional. So some clients will get them with the bilateral music, will identify the target. Let's say their target is anxiety related to, a childhood event that was traumatic, and then we'll find the brain spot, and the client might process for 40 minutes in complete silence.
Wow.
And at the end of it, we'll check in and see where they are and their activation around the traumatic memory may have reduced significantly. So with brain spotting, it's a lot more about just allowing what's happening in the brain.
Uh-huh. How many years, Elle, have you been using these techniques in your practice? I'm really quite fascinated, about all of this because for years and years, I think that probably 30 or 40% of my practice had to do with early child sexual abuse and sexual assault. And, for me, it was talking and getting the people to go over and over and over, again, what happened. And through that process, the trauma somehow got desensitized and people were able to move forward. So with you, I'm fascinated. Was this something that you learned early on and began incorporating it into your private practice in the beginning? Or was it something that you have added in the way
that
you work?
So it was something that I always knew I wanted to learn because I had actually, in my own therapy as a client, I had received EMDR as a client, and that had been pretty profound for me. So I was aware of what EMDR was and what some of the more somatic modalities were, including like there's somatic experiencing, there's, which is similar to trauma resiliency. So there's many different things. So I got trained in EMDR in 2017. And then I got trained in brain spotting in the beginning of 2018. And it was kind of a one-off. I was like, great, I have EMDR. I'm good with that. And then I had a friend, a colleague, who had a really powerful experience with brain spotting. And she said, you know, there's a training coming up. It's 3 days. You should just do it. So I said, you know, what the hell? And I just did it. And it was so profound. It really built on what I had learned in EMDR. So right away, I started using both of them in my practice. And I'm in the process of getting certified for brain spotting. And then after that, I'm going to do the certification for EMDR, which is a little bit more of a lengthy process than the brain spotting one. But yeah, I've been using them both in my practice for a few years now. And I've also, as soon as I got trained in brain spotting, I found a brain spotting therapist for myself. So there's a significant amount of learning that happens, I think, as a therapist, when you're on the other side of the couch, right? When you're receiving the modality. So that has also kind of expanded my understanding of each modality.
So it sounds like, I mean, this has been a game changer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking, gee, you know, I've been one of these more traditional therapists, psychodynamic and starting at the beginning and getting people to, as I said, to live and relive the traumas, and things have typically, you know, worked out pretty well. But I mean, this could really, really fast forward the process.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I mean, it sounds so powerful, Elle, what you are doing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's really powerful work. And I also want to highlight that I'm not just doing EMDR and brain spotting and TRIM, that's the acronym for trauma resiliency model. I'm not just doing those in every session. So I do work with my clients psychodynamically, and we do explore attachment issues and family patterns, and we do talk through a significant amount. So I'm not saying this type of therapy absolutely replaces everything else, not at all. You know, talk therapy is incredibly, incredibly valuable, and there is definitely a place for it. And then these other modalities, I think just fill in the gaps, you know, and can, like you said, can really accelerate the process.
You know, one of the other questions that actually just came to mind is that with these different modalities that, you know, sound to be, and you know, I'm going to really get into the literature and learn more about, you know, what people are saying in our field, I would guess then that it could really help to reduce the whole pharmacological aspect of what so many people in this country, you know, get involved in. I mean, people are so medicated, so overly medicated in the United States. I'm Canadian, living in New York, of course, right now. But have you seen that there's been some sort of a relationship between using these modalities and and less of a need for, you know, psychotropic and for psychopharmacological drugs?
Right. I have, you know, it's a really interesting thing to consider. And a lot of the clients that I work with have such severe and such kind of chronic and long-term symptoms going on that they are on psychotropic medications, and they are benefiting from that. And so we're not, you know, I'm not saying, you know, brain spotting and EMDR like replace the need for meds, but I have worked with clients who have not needed to be on medication and then, but like have presented with significant anxiety or significant distress over a traumatic event. And we've been able to process through that event with trauma processing to get them to the point where they don't need medication. Whereas I would imagine if we weren't processing through the trauma and getting them such strong relief so quickly, if this would have continued for a few months, I definitely would have been recommending medication. But we haven't had that need because we've processed it through and resolved it.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that many of your colleagues are incorporating these modalities and techniques into their practices? Because you think of 2018, I mean, that's relatively new. So it's not like, you know, people, I know with EMDR, it's been around for a long time, but I mean, with some of these other modalities, if you're talking, you know, 2018, 2019, I mean, this is new. And I'm just curious, you know, whether or not in California and of course around the country, you're finding that more people, more psychotherapists are using these techniques in their practice.
You know, I do find that. And I know there's a big kind of brain and body based trauma therapy community in LA where I'm at. A lot of my colleagues are trained in EMDR. A lot of my colleagues are trained in brain spotting, and I try to refer when I'm, you know, typically when I'm referring people out, I'm trying to refer to people who are trained in those modalities as well, just because, you know, they can be so helpful for such a variety of issues. Brain spotting was invented, I believe, in 2003 or 2004. By David Grand, who was trained in EMDR and also trained in somatic experiencing. So he kind of took elements from both, combined them, and then added the eye position. And that's how he came up with brain spotting. So the modalities have been around for a while, but I think brain spotting is just starting to gain more recognition. I get a lot of people who call me for EMDR therapy. And then once I kind of explain, there's EMDR, there's brain spotting, there's TRIM. What do you want to do? A lot of times they'll choose brain spotting. And then, of course, we're always implementing elements of TRIM as well.
No, it sounds like you really have. And I rarely say this, but I mean, it sounds like you have an incredible practice and that you're doing some really, really significant work. Certainly most therapists, although I must admit that I don't talk to too many therapists, here in New York are not, at least the ones that I know, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the social workers, are not using these techniques at all. Huh. And, you know, I wonder whether or not in certain situations that we're really missing the boat.
Mm. Really? You know, it's interesting. I'm a little biased.
Okay, you can be biased. That's okay.
yeah. So, you know, as someone who's trained in these modalities, and as someone, you know, I've benefited just in my personal life resolving, you know, so many past issues and my own traumas and dissolving kind of negative core beliefs from these modalities, I'm a big advocate for both EMDR and brain spotting, and then TRIM as well. TRIM I see as a little more adjunct, but you know, many people use it as a standalone modality. I personally feel that the bilateral stimulation, whether it's in EMDR or brain spotting, adds a pretty significant element to the healing. But yeah, I'm a big advocate for these modalities, and, you know, brain spotting is easy to get trained in. You know, the first training is 3 days and they tell you to start using it right after that initial training. And then to
tell
get
me,
certified,
is it effective to do telehealth?
Yeah.
Using these techniques?
Yes, absolutely. Which
Really?
I was even a little surprised by when the pandemic hit, and I was like, what are we going to do? I was consulting with my colleagues and learning that you can absolutely do all of these techniques through Zoom, through telehealth. So with
That's
EMDR,
amazing.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that's amazing. And
yeah.
You know, I wish you were here in New York City, but you know, I actually have somebody who I'm thinking of referring to you, and because it's a completely, you know, different way than, you know, the way I work, but I'm very bottom line. It's about you do what you need to do, you know, you use whatever technique you need to use, you know, to get the job done, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I really am. And for people who know me, they know that I'm not one of these people who's particularly enamored with American mental health and the over medication or prescription medication, etc. But I have to say, Al, I'm really impressed with what you have to say and what you're doing in your practice. How can people reach you?
Yeah, well, thank you, Beatty, so much. And, you know, people can reach me on my website or at my email. My website is lmichellepsychotherapy.com. And that's E-L-L-E. Michelle is just M-I-C-H-E-L. And then the word psychotherapy. And my email is lmichellepsychotherapy@gmail.com.
Okay, that's great. And by the way, I don't know whether I had mentioned to you, but, you know, this show is going to be, you know, forever in the Progressive Radio Network archives, so that people who have not been able to hear, I mean, I think this really amazing, you know, conversation and the amazing things that you're doing, they're going to be able to go to Ask Beatty Podbean, and there are as of today 338 Ask Beatty shows that I have done here already on the Progressive Radio Network, and they're going to be able to listen to the show. Of course, you're going to be able to listen to the show too, and you can use it in, you know, whatever way you would like. But what a pleasure it's been talking with you, and we really need to stay in touch. If you ever get to New York, you're certainly somebody that I would love to get together with, and I'm going to do my own reading about some of these other modalities. And again, thank you so much, El Michelle, and let's talk soon, okay?
Yes, thank you so much, Beatty. It was so fun to be on your show. I appreciate the invitation, and I would love to get together next time I make it to New York.
Absolutely. So listen, enjoy the beautiful weather in California. It's warming up here. It's still a little chilly.
Yes.
And we'll talk soon again. Thank you so
much. Thank you. Okay, great.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
So interesting to be talking to someone, El Michelle. She really does sound terrific. And she has found, and many, many people, you know, have found in the country, that there are a lot of other techniques that can really, really help people who have gone through some very traumatic experiences in their life. Of course, post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual abuse of various different kinds, you know, sexual assault. And again, if you're interested in reaching out to her, her name is El Michelle. And, you know, I frankly have found this interview to be extremely, extremely, you know, enlightening. Because, you know, when you're looking for therapy, there is no one size that fits all. And of course, so many of the people, you know, that contact me have relationship issues and sexual problems. And, you know, some in the last year or two are contacting me for early child sexual abuse issues and problems, you know, and sexual assault. But I think that we as consumers, it's really important, you know, when we are deciding that we want to reach out and ask for help, that we make sure that we ask all the right questions, even though as a consumer and as a first-time client or patient, some people simply don't know the questions to ask. But we have to be very, very prepared when we are reaching out and asking for help, that the person who we are reaching out and asking for help to is someone who is actually really qualified and has had a lot of experience in the particular area or areas that we are needing help in. And of course, as I've said, over and over again over the years, that all therapists are certainly not the same. So, I'm hoping that you found this interview with L. Michelle interesting. I certainly did. And as I've mentioned, I practice in a very, very different kind of way, but it's always great to be able to reach out to colleagues and meet people who are doing some very substantial work using other techniques. Well, I can't believe talking about time. It's 3:56. I do not know where this hour has come and gone. I had a number of other things that I actually wanted to talk with you about, but I'm going to have to leave that for next week. And again, I want to thank you all so much for listening to the Ask Beattie Show and sending me emails and sending me Facebook comments. And of course, I always want you to know that we have a live calling number here, and you can always call the show live at 888-874-4888. And you can always leave, be texts, or you can leave me emails. If there's any particular issue that you would like for me to tackle on the show. These are things that I really would like to do, because the reality is that this show, it's not for me. This show is for you to help make your life easier and more joyful and happier. So I'm going to leave you with my two weekly messages that I really hope that you are going to take in. And the first message is, of course, to do whatever it is that you need to do, including reaching out and asking for help, to be good to yourself and to do what is in your best interest, whether we're talking about diet, whether we're talking about exercise or relationships. And the second message, of course, is that we all need to do and continue to do a much, much better job in learning to love each other. And my favorite song that ends the Ask Beattie Show every week is What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. So goodbye, everybody. I will talk with you next Monday live, and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So enjoy the rest of the day. Be good to yourself. Be good to others. And I will talk with you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.